Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 11 of Podcast Versus Enemies, a Massive Breakdown show. This week, we are talking about some more Grandmaster Nightfalls, the upcoming Master Raid, and stopping by another weapon foundry, Hake, as well as touching on a few Nightfall weapons that have been tuned up since the previous season. For all of our cross-show listeners, Massive Breakdown just put out episode 254, which is part two of their Fusion Rifle Deep Dive with Kit and guest host Lego LaFlash. So if you are interested in the inner workings of Fusions, make sure to give that a listen. My name is Sink Beer, and joining me, as always, are Court and Impetus. It's great to be back with you guys again this week, and let's kick it off with some reviews.
Yeah, we do have quite a few reviews from the last couple of episodes. We've also got a little bit of community feedback from a few people. So we're going to shout out a few reviews. We've got Thunder Bear, and we also have Go ISU 305. Thank you very much for your reviews there. Just a little reminder, if you do want to leave us a little review, you can do it on Apple Podcasts. Or you can send it directly to us. We do add that to our roundup of feedback. Some feedback specifically from CassioKid88, who sent me a very lovely DM. Just spoke about how the Massive Breakdown podcast is making him really confident to do raids and GMs. We also have on the Discord, we have Clancy5000 and Booper, who sent some feedback and general sort of praise towards us on the podcast discussion channel on the Massive Breakdowns Discord. And also Deacon, one of our amazing Patreon sponsors, sent a DM to Impetus just to give us some constructive feedback for future breakdowns when it comes to raids, Grandmasters, and all that deal. So thank you very much for all your feedback, guys. Very helpful. If you do want to send any sort of feedback, constructive, otherwise, make sure to hit us up on any of our socials, which you'll get to get. You'll get all our socials at the end of the episode. Impetus, what do we have going on in this episode?
We have got a lot. So we are covering GMs again. We are in GM season. So today we are talking about the Arms Dealer. That was this past week's featured GM. And we are also breaking down the Glassway, which is going to be the current weekly featured GM when this episode goes live. We are also breaking down the Duty Bound and Silicon Neuroma Nightfall weapons. And as Kabir mentioned, we are visiting the Hake Foundry. And then, time permitting, we hope to break down some of the TWAB highlights, including the rotating raids and dungeons information that has been teased for a while now. So, a lot on our plate, a lot to cover. Before we get into that, we ask this question every week. Fellas, what did you do in Destiny 2 last week? Saint, what did you do?
So, my big thing is kind of what I did about Destiny. You know, it's close enough. I have spent some time over the past few weeks working with the just info and data sets from the Massive Breakdown guys on a new tool I'm calling the Massive Breakdown's Weapon Comparison Tool. This is something that I developed in Tableau using a lot of the core data set from the Massive Breakdown guys to kind of make an encyclopedia of weapons and their base stats and things like that. It includes about 470 weapons. I still need to add in some glaives and swords, but it is a pretty comprehensive guide to every weapon in the game and all of their base stats, how they line up to one another within their archetypes and just main weapon types and all that stuff. So really appreciate all the support and feedback on that so far. It's been awesome, and it's kind of my first real foray into the world of Destiny science. So all the Massive Breakdowns guys just have been a huge encouragement in all that, and just the support from the technical side from Kit and all the work that he's done in the past with this data has been great. Other than that, so in the actual game, we finished up the three-man Vow of the Disciple. That was a big one. Honestly, the caretaker was by far the worst part. That was just like super punishing. If you have your person that's doing stuns get knocked off the end of the platform, it's like usually you're gonna wipe. Maybe you could save it, but that was tough. And then just kind of getting all the timing right with the symbols and things like that and dealing enough damage was definitely really difficult. exhibition was not nearly as bad as you might think, considering the timing seems like impossible. It was not too bad, and Rolk finally was also not too bad. Just had to split it up into a few DPS phases there, but luckily my teammates and I were putting our Reed's Regrets to good use, so we were able to bring him down without too much trouble. It's a great challenge. Big thanks to my teammates, Professor and Oblivion, as usual. I've been through a lot with those guys and, you know, stuck by the side. But that's all about I got. Oh, I don't want to forget some time I spent on LFG this past week. I know that also sounds funny for a thing you want to talk about. Most people don't like to talk about their LFG experiences. But I played some trials this past week, and then also just playing some other general PvE and stuff like that. And I ran into a guy named Reverend Beaver, who I played with for a while, and, you know, just went through the whole thing, and, he had, at the very end, he kind of asked me about the show and all that, and it was just wild to be recognized by somebody in the community. So thanks for listening, Reverend. Hopefully you hear this on your next commute to work. So that was a lot, but yes, big week this past week. A lot of fun designing the new weapons tool, and just a lot of encouragement from all the people in the Massive Breakdowns community, which is always appreciated.
Busy, busy. I can't say the exact same. I've just been just doing some GMs, just farming a little bit of Arms Dealer, which we will sort of gloss over today. But just the usual standard Destiny for me. And I can only give you all the spotlight for the hard work you've done for your little project for the Destiny Science team. So, yeah. Impetus, what about yourself?
Yep, GMs, man, it's been brutal. I've spent a lot of time in Lightblade finding out what does not work and what does work. So want to shout out Tiller and Hot Pocket. We were putting in some hours, and we finally got it done. It is a great challenge. A lot of fun, a lot of satisfaction. That final boss room is probably one of my favorite encounters in all of Destiny. And it's crazy to think that it's outside of a raid, but it's, yeah. If you know, you know. That's all I'll say. Yeah. I can't wait to break it down when it becomes the featured weekly GM. There's a lot to say about it. So, but that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about GMs. So just want to give a quick shout out to our previous episode, episode 10. That was our overview / introduction to GM. So if you've never done a GM before, the opening part of that episode should give you kind of an idea of what to expect. We talk about some best practices, some general things. We also talked about the Scarlet Keep. Just another thing to note about Nightfalls this upcoming week, when this website will go live, we will have double Nightfall drops. So it will be Glassway. So, probably not an easy farm, but should you get a completion, you'll get a little extra something for your troubles. So just something to be aware of. All right, now we're going to get into the Arms Dealer. I'm going to kind of breeze through this as there's not a whole lot to talk about, and I want to make sure that we have plenty of time to cover the Glassway as there's a lot more going on there. So Arms Dealer is probably one of the easiest, if not the easiest, strike GM now, especially after the changes to Lake of Shadows. It's certainly one of the fastest ones. If you're going relatively fast, you can get 10 minutes, which is crazy, crazy quick, especially compared to Glassway. If you're taking your time, if you're going through this for the very first time, if you have someone on your team who's new to GMs, 20 minutes is still probably the amount of time you'll be taking, which is still very fast when you have 45 minutes before all your revives disappear. So if you have someone who is playing Destiny for the first time, they just started with the expansion, or someone who's never done a GM before, I would definitely recommend sending them into the Arms Dealer for their very first. It's a great experience. It's nice and quick. If you wipe, you can go right back in there and you won't be losing too much time. So what can you expect in the Arms Dealer? As far as champions, we have Barrier and Unstop. This is an entirely Cabal-themed strike. You're going to have Solar and Void Shields. It's going to be mostly Void. There are some Solar Shields in the boss room. You're going to have Void Shields on the Incendiors, and that matters because there is a burn for the GMs. That is a feature now that has been added with this most recent batch and will be present in all future GMs. In the Arms Dealer, that is a solar burn. So the Incendiors shoot fire, the Unstoppable champions have flamethrowers. There's plenty of other solar damage as well, but those are going to be the big ones that you're going to be dealing with. So you do want to watch out for that. In terms of your resistances, we do have an artifact mod this season called Thermoshock Plating that gives you arc and solar resistance. That's going to be huge. Definitely recommend that. And then I would also put on a sniper resistance. That's going to be nice for the Scions as well as the barrier champions. It's not going to make too much of a difference when you're covering Brakasan. He will one-shot you through sniper resistance, but getting up to Brakasan, it will definitely make a difference. So that's just something to be aware of. Saint, what do we recommend for classes and loadouts for the arms dealer?
So we have a solar burn on the arms dealer, that acute solar burn, which is going to be increasing that outgoing as well as incoming damage. On, you know, just, we're going to go by class, and then we'll also just talk about general weapons. Right off the bat, rockets are kind of the play here, especially because of how they let you burn down the boss at the end, which we'll talk about that in a little bit, about how you can trigger it a little bit early to make sure you can get those easy melts. But somebody with the G-Horn and a couple other players with some solar legendary rockets is going to allow you to crank out crazy DPS. Starting with the Hunters, you are probably going to be going for a Orpheus Riggs just for general debuffs and control for a lot of orbs and things like that, allow you to get through sending sections quickly. Orpheus shots will really eat up that tank in that opening section. Also, Celestial Nighthawk, if you just really want to sling some damage and be a cowboy, not a bad option. Does crazy damage, can just wipe champions and things like that. As far as your general kinetic slots and things like that go, Arbalest is awesome. We've praised it plenty already. It just has that anti-barrier. It has the shield popping. It's got a good catalyst with it these days. No reason not to use that. If you are looking to cover both, you can go for maybe a Void or Solar Pulse Rifle. Stars in the Shadow, the Battler, you've got a Ogma P3. You can kind of move that in the kinetic slot if you want, but you know, using a barrier or an unstop weapon with that solar damage is just going to feel nice. You know, you're at such a disadvantage. Taking advantage of the burn is always nice on a primary. And then, like we said, you got a G-Horn to buff your team along with maybe an Ascendancy, Code Duello, a Hez and Vengeance if you've been in Vogue. Those are all great choices for helping or just dealing out damage in quick bursts for some champions. And then using your loose and finisher, just keep that cycle going. On the Titans, you probably want Sentinel with Banner Shield. Ursus is a classic play here. Nowadays, you can run this with some debuff grenades, which is great for taking out those champs. Maybe some, Vortex grenades is the one that I'm trying to think of. Great for those long champ debuffs. And then lastly, Voidwalker, probably Nezarek Sin. You could go into some solar build here with your Ice Age Cid helmet if you really want, but just Nova Bombs, Nezarek Sins, and then like we're talking about, you know, nice solar primary or something like that to help you deal with the champs. And then I mentioned this just a second ago, but yeah, Loosen Finisher is just so key for keeping those rockets flowing. Rockets aren't super known for their ammo economy, but when you can put a heavy ammo generating mod in your class item, you don't need it. So that's loadouts. Now we can just dive into the strike itself.
Yes, that is Don Chorus that he is dissing, sorry. In case some of you haven't watched the cultural behemoth that is Ice Age. I can't believe you'd do my boy dirty like that. It's already ugly enough, man. Come on. All right, moving on to the encounters and sections. Again, I don't want to spend too much time. You're going to go through this very quickly, even if it's your first time. There's just not a lot of enemies in this strike, and it's a pretty condensed strike on the whole. When you first spawn in, you're going to have two champions right off the bat, including an unstop. Unstops do love to rush you, so stun the unstop. You can choose to finish both if you want, or you can deal with the unstop first. The barrier is going to be kind of in the back of that spawn room, so you can finish that one if you want to deal with the unstop immediately. You're going to pull out your ghost to spawn the door open, and so you can go outside to the fuel cell pickup section, the open area out there. There's going to be two waves here. So in the first wave, you're going to have some Scion snipers that will be on the balcony. That's going to be across the way from when you first step outside. Definitely want to deal with them, as they will wreck you very quickly. You're also going to have a Thresher. That's a flying vehicle that will come in. One or two rockets should deal with that right off the bat. That's going to be nice too, because that can get an angle on you from being up in the air. And then you're going to deal with the rest of the enemies. Just watch out for grenades. Cabal grenades are solar based, so they can be extremely lethal on GM difficulty. There is going to be a mini boss, a yellow bar. He's called the Unsanctioned Blaster. When you kill him, you will spawn in the second wave of enemies, and in the second wave will be an unstopped champion. He'll spawn kind of in the back towards where you pick up the fuel cell. You'll feel free to finish him as much as you want. Kill the adds around him just to make that easier. After the enemies are dead, you'll need to pick up the fuel cell and then go deposit it in the next room. We'll call that the dunk room. You're going to want to take that, kind of pick up the fuel cell and then get about halfway, drop down to that little platform, and then you can drop the fuel cell. You'll want to do that because a thresher will spawn in and there will be a barrier champion kind of directly in front of you up above your walkway. You'll want to kill him. I wouldn't advise finishing just because there will be war beasts that spawn in. You'll have a lot of enemies. There's also going to be a second barrier that's going to be standing right where you will dunk the fuel cell. So that's probably the one I would recommend that you finish. Clear those enemies out. Once you do dunk the cell, the door will open up immediately in front of you, and you will have an unstoppable come out of that, as well as some other adds. Deal with them. You can finish the unstop if you want. If you don't want to finish the unstop, that's fine, because a second unstop will appear up on the platform where you need to progress. You can go and finish him. I think there's one other enemy that's right next to him, so very easy to deal with. Again, you're going to be moving through this quite quickly. After you deal with these enemies, you're going to be running through some hallways, and then you will come out of Firebase Hades and out into an open area where you'll have the Cabal ship, the Ouroboros Victoria, in front of you. A lot of stuff is going to be happening right here. Immediately as you step out, hop onto your Sparrow, and you're going to head left towards the landing gear of the ship. You're going to jump up onto the landing pads, and you can kind of get around all the enemies that are fighting. You'll have some fallen with some arc shields. There are technically, if you look in the menu for all the active modifiers of the strike, it does say there are arc shields. This is the one section. You can totally skip them. Don't worry about these guys. The one thing you need to be aware of is that there will be a barrier champion on the base of the entrance ramp. You want to kill this one. Don't go for a finish. There's just too many adds nearby. It's not worth it. You'll have opportunities to finish later on. Kill the barrier champion so you can get your platinum rating, and then hop onto your Sparrow and zoom into the ship. Go around a few hallways, and you will come into the large open tank room. You're going to have two barrier champions and a total of four unstoppables, but they do spread out and spawn in waves. So the first thing you want to deal with will be the Goliath tank. It'll be right in front of you firing at you. There's going to be a bunch of adds around the area. Rockets at each of the tank thrusters will burn it down quickly. If you have a damaged super, you could probably get away with shooting that or firing that off right now, and you'll have enough time to get it before you go to the boss room. There will be kind of a lone unstop that'll be around in the area. It will probably charge you as you're dealing with the tank. You can stun it to just keep it at bay, but you can also finish it for some easy ammo. Going to be of a lot of void shielded incendiors as well. So if you have your void weapon or your arbalest, deal with those as well. And then on the upper platforms will be two barrier champions that'll be firing down at you. They have arc damage. They will be at a distance. This is where your sniper resist will come in. They're going to be right next to each other. So if you're not comfortable finishing, don't worry about it. You'll have opportunities for other unstops a little bit later on. You can also finish those for plenty of ammo. After those guys are dead, you're going to activate the two levers to spawn your second tank on the elevator. Dealing with the second tank, you're going to want to make sure you get that down quickly. Just make sure that your fire team's a little bit spread out so that the tank, when it fires at you, doesn't kill you all right away. I know I've had some runs get scuffed just because we're all standing next to each other, and one stray tank shot can end the run, which is unfortunate. So deal with the tank thrusters. Again, rockets are going to be great. You will have three unstoppable champions drop down with the second tank. They will all rush you. I think the best strategy here is to kind of space out your stuns so that you can get the champions far enough away and then burn them down. Finish them all. It'll be great. You'll be swimming in heavy ammo. You'll have one more yellow bar blaster that you'll kill, and then the door will open up. You'll get some war beasts to run out. Not a problem. Grab all your ammo. Go through there. You'll have a door that will take forever to open up, and then you will be in the pre-boss elevator room. This will be the last room with champions. There are no champions in the final boss room. So in here we have two barriers and one unstoppable. You can finish these guys. This is going to be kind of a last place to get all of your ammo topped off. So definitely want to do that before you hop on the elevator and go up to face Brakasan. Take this nice and slow. Again, don't need to rush. Just don't die to any stupid stuff. Do remember that if you want to spawn Brakas early, you don't want to activate the lever to send the elevator up. So the way that that will work, if you're not familiar with how Brakas can be summoned early, you'll have a player climb up the elevator chain. It can be anyone. Just make sure that you don't use all your jump up getting up to the elevator, because if you do fall down, you probably will kill yourself. So you want to go all the way up the elevator chain. There will be a little metal covering at the very top of that. Just make sure you're at the height of it, and then you can jump safely back down. What that will do is when you finally activate the lever and kill the cabal that drops in with all the enemies, Brakas will immediately appear at his platform at the very top of the elevator. This will allow you to damage him as the elevator is moving up. Normally, he will only appear once the elevator is towards the top of the elevator chain. So this is the strategy that we recommend. It will allow you to get a very easy clear. The strategy, once he shows up, you want to hide behind the boxes that are on the elevator. He will be sniping you. It will be a one shot if he hits you. So just make sure that you're hiding when he's firing down at you. He'll have the red laser beam that will turn dark red when he's about to fire. So just make sure you're hiding behind boxes when that turns dark red. The strategy here, use your rockets first. Don't use your supers right away. You want to use up all of your heavy weapon damage. You will, if you're using Galley and two solar legendary rocket launchers, you'll get him down to about 20 to 10% of his health. He does not have a lot of health. Once you're at the very top of the elevator and you've run out of all your ammo, then you can throw in your supers, especially, you know, if you've got your golden gunshot or your Nova bomb. You want to wait until all the rockets are done. And yeah, don't miss your shots. You'll hit him, he'll die, and that's the end of the GM. If something happens and you know, you guys get sniped, you're not able to finish him, and you do have to do the final boss room, I'll give a little bit of a heads up as what to expect. Again, there are no champions. You do have to worry about Scorpius turrets and threshers. The boss does not have any, they're not hard immunity phases, but he has health triggers where he will run to some platforms on the sides of the arena. He'll jump up and stand up there and snipe down at you, and there will be an immunity bubble that happens. However, you should be doing enough damage as you're going up the elevator that he will hop down after that, because it's a health trigger. It's not a hard immunity phase. So he'll jump down and then go over to the other platform. Just damage him as he's jumping down. Be aware that there will be war beasts and other enemies. I think there are also solar shielded cabal here. Just take that part slow. Again, you're going to have all the time in the world to do this GM. It's not going to be extremely difficult. Just call out enemies if you get stuck up there and you actually have to do the arena part. Again, you should be doing enough damage. He does not have a lot of health. Call out some enemies, finish if you need to. There aren't any yellow bars, I don't think, but you should be able to get some special finishers if you want to run those. And yeah, it's a nice, easy boss room, nice, easy GM in total. Again, it should be about 10 to 15 minutes. Great for a farm. We just had it this past week, so the farm is done. But if you have someone who's new to GMs, they can go and select it from their menu. And yeah, that should be nice and easy. What's not going to be easy, though, is our next GM. That's the Glassway Saint. What can we expect with the Europa GM?
Well, if you are looking for barrier servitors and overload captains, you have come to the right place. Let me tell you what, we've got them all. There are a lot of champions in this. There are a lot of big, bulky Vex Wyvern bosses. You have two mini boss fallen, you know, Archons or what have you. And you have Arc and Solar Shields. So barriers, overloads, Arc and Solar, a lot of big, beefy Vex and fallen bosses. Gotta have a lot of ammo to make it through this. Again, that you know, the finishers are going to be even more important here. There's also Void Acute Burn on the Glassway this season, so the Void Splash damage coming in from the Wyverns and the boss are really going to knock you, especially if you're not wearing some kind of Void or Thermoshock and Concussive dampener on that. Would definitely recommend a Void and a Concussive on this to keep yourself from dying instantly, which I know most of you, as well as myself, like to try to avoid as much as possible. So let's talk a little bit more about loadouts. What are we taking into the Glassway for barriers and overloads?
Yes. So again, capitalize on the void burns. They are, yes, they're a negative, but they're also a big bonus. So do be mindful of the void burn where possible. For Titans, Ursa Banner Shield, so powerful, very useful, hard to go wrong. Debuff grenades, suppressors are going to be really nice. You're also going to want to make sure you have that overshield. It's going to get eaten up quickly, but it's going to be very, very helpful. High resilience is going to be nice. Want to make sure you have the barricades up as frequently as possible. Hunters, we're going to go void again. Say Omni Smoke Bomb, very popular this season. We're going to be recommending it a lot for a lot of the endgame, truly hard GMs. It's going to be amazing, especially when you're in the final boss room and getting swarmed by enemies. Having that invis up can be very, very life-saving with going for revives. Warlocks, you've got some options here. You could go for burst damage versus champions, especially in that final boss room. Nova Bomb would be very helpful. Remember that we do have overload void grenades this season. So if you want to spec in a devour with Vortex, you can certainly do that with Controverse holds. The other big one, of course, would be Shadebinder and Stasis. You could use Eye of Another World for faster uptime, or the new Osmiomancy Gloves if you've gotten a really decent roll of that for some double stasis turrets. That's going to be huge for locking down areas. In terms of weapons, Arbalest, again, we're going to be saying this a lot. It's the best barrier weapon, totally worth the exotic slot. Definitely recommend that. If someone else is running, or if the other two people on your fire team are running Arbalest, you could certainly do a blinding grenade launcher. You could go Wither Horde for add control. That's going to be very helpful, especially for the mini boss, or Izanagi's Burden. All tried and true, all fantastic. Energy slot, again, we've got barrier and overload champions. So we have barrier bow. Under your skin is a void bow that we have. We've got Tiku's Divination with Solar, great for add control. Anti-barrier scouts, we've got Contingency Plan, that's Arc, Trustee, Solar, Vision of Confluence is Solar. Pointed Inquiry is Void. You also get Adaptive Munitions, that can be very, very helpful. Or the new Aisha's Embrace from Trials, that's also Void. Overloads, Special, Divinity is definitely an option here. Very consistent stunning, that can be extremely helpful, especially when you have multiple overloads coming after you. We also have Auto Rifle and SMG Overload. Probably going to recommend Auto Rifles just for the extra range. So we've got Summoner, Solar, Sweet, Sorrow is Arc, that's a craftable one. Arctic Haze, Solar, and Shadow Price, which is a former GM weapon, that's Arc. It also rolls with Disruption Break, which is going to be very nice here. In the heavy slot, it's going to be rockets and linear fusion rifles. Pick your poison. So we've got Red Herring, that's a void rocket. Royal Entry, also a void. G-Horn, definitely nice if you can stick together, not blow yourself up in the final final boss room. The bosses do like to move away. They also have immunity shields circling them, so that can be a bit of a risk for wasting a rocket. Linear fusions, Threaded Needle is our only void option, so that's definitely a great one. Hopefully you've got a good roll. We have a couple of arc ones as well. Tarantula, it's not quite as nice, or the other solar ones. I do think that, Threaded Needle is probably going to be your safest bet. So a lot of different options. Talk to your fire team, find the right combination. You're going to be going through a lot of different options. Find what works best for you guys. All right, now let's get into the encounters and sections.
Yeah, so we start off in Europa. We come down the hill, and then immediately you kind of jump into this section of the cave with a overload and overload captain and just some general fallen in there. Like we kind of said in the intro, a lot of champions, and we'll talk specifically about how we can spawn those in staggered waves to make it not so overwhelming as you're fighting through the various little caves. There's kind of chunks that you go through with the barriers as they come down through all the fight, and the pattern of how the enemies spawn in kind of repeats itself as you go through these different rooms. So yeah, as you come down the hill into the main first room there in the cave, there will be an overload captain, some small fallen with some shanks off to the right. Sniper shanks are a nightmare, got to keep an eye out for that. But otherwise, just kind of take your time, slowly work through it. It's really not too bad. When you get into the first cave of the energy barrier at the end of it, there will be another Overload Captain there. And then that's kind of the first wave of enemies that comes in. And then in the second wave of enemies in that first cave with the energy barrier at the back, there will be more Fallen adds that are kind of rushing you. I can't remember the name of the Fallen that are invisible and they run at you. Anyways.
Marauders. You know,
Yeah. Those guys will run at you, and there will be anti-barrier servitor in the back. So just kind of keep your distance in the first cave up in that ledge. It'll be no problem. The second section after you move in through that is kind of your first mini-boss fight. There are two big Fallen bosses that you have to fight in two sections in a row. Right when you get in there, there's going to be an Overload Captain and a couple of Sniper Vandals in the back. You should try to peek over to the right side of the ledge there and then just take those snipers out immediately because they're just really punishing. And then the Overload Captain should spawn over in the middle of the room. After the snipers are down, you can turn your focus over to him. And then as long as you stay in the back of the room, kind of behind where there are some rocks and things like that, you should be able to avoid spawning in the barrier servitor until you finish dealing with this first Fallen mini-boss. So you get in there, you take out the overloads and the snipers, stay in the back, and try not to progress too far because that can trigger the barrier spawn. If that servitor comes in there, it just kind of throws off the flow. He can shield the boss and the other enemies in the area, and that's just really not ideal. So try to get as many of those guys down, including that Fallen mini-boss. Before you move up, you'll spawn in that barrier servitor or a few more enemies, and once you kill those guys, you will be through the second cave. And then we have kind of a longer area, which repeats itself yet again. This is like cave 3 this time, and this is mini-boss fight number 2. So you want to stay in the back, just like in the previous room. You're going to be moving side to side. There's kind of two sections of the room that are divided by a cavern. Have somebody take up on the back left side of the room. You know, some people take up on the back right, so that way you can transfer the aggro back and forth. There will be Overload and the boss and some other enemies, just like in the first mini-boss fight. And then as you progress forward into the room, you will eventually spawn a barrier servitor and another wave of adds. So take out the Overload and the boss, wait, focus on the barrier by moving forward, and then that should be the third cave. And then we'll just move on into a bit of a platforming section, where it's just like this big Vex architecture open area as you're making your way to the portal. This area is not too bad, but there are some things in here that can just outright one-shot you. You got Vandal Snipers that spawn in on the left right when you come in. You're going to want to take those out and then use the pillars in the room as cover. So don't just start go running across the platforms like you would in a normal strike. Really easy to just get caught by a sniper like that and taken out. There's some shanks in there, some Vandal Snipers. Use the pillars, take those out. Move forward a little bit, and kind of in the middle of the room will be your first Overload Champion. It's Overload Captain there. Take that guy out, and then you should all converge kind of on his location. And then as you move forward, there will be, I think, a few more snipers either on that platform or in the back of the room, as well as one more Overload Captain that is kind of on that mid-platform there. So make sure you can stun him before you jump across that next platform, because sometimes he will hide conveniently behind the wall, and your fire team member will jump across thinking, look at this cleared out platform, and it turns out it's not cleared out at all. There's an Overload Champ behind that corner, and he's waiting for you. After you have cleared the platforming chunk there, you move on to the plate capture and the radial area pool, which is the last area before you get into the boss fight. So lots of sections here, and we're finally at the last one. When you are standing on this plate, you are going to trigger enemy spawns, not necessarily as you move through the room, but as you progress the percentage on the plate. You can't exactly look at a bar to see your percentage, but a general good rule of thumb, move forward, stand on the plate, put a Titan barricade down, shoot some adds. When the enemy starts spawning in, back up, go stand by the crates, shoot the rest of the enemies. Once they're all dead, move back up as a team, put down another barricade or a hunter smoke, progress it a little further, move back, kill the adds, and yada yada. After you have cleared out all the shanks that are spawning in, explosive shanks, all kinds of things like that, doing the wave checkpoints on the plate should kind of help you keep that under control. And then if you have a teammate move forward a little bit in the room, you will spawn in more enemies. I think as soon as the plate is clear, a overload cap will spawn right below you. And then as you progress through the room, you will have a final barrier servitor right before you go into the boss fight. This room also has snipers that spawn up along the sides of the room as you go through and progress, and those will one-shot you pretty much or very close to it. So really got to watch out for those as you're going through that last room of the radial area. Keep up against the walls, use the cover points, you know, just kind of counter each other's looks. You know, if you're up against the left wall, be looking right for your other teammates and vice versa, and that shouldn't be too bad. That's about it for the lead up. And we're going to cap it off with the coup de grace here, the boss room, which is a true challenge.
Yeah, well, I have the wonderful task of breaking down the boss room. Haven't heard from me for a little while, but yes, this is the bulk of the strike. The lead up to the boss room is very manageable. It's pretty simple enough, but don't let that fool you into thinking this is quite an easy Grandmaster, because it's as it stands, at least in this season, it's maybe top two of toughest, roughest Grandmasters, and it's just purely because of the boss room. Before you actually spawn the boss, you do have a overload and a few just trash adds to deal with. Killing the overload is what starts the boss fight. So if you want to just wait for your supers, your abilities to charge up, if you're hoping to get a heavy brick, if you don't have any at that point, which you should hopefully have a robust ammunition for the rest of this fight, you can wait, just kind of build up your supers, etc. Once you do kill that overload is when the boss and Mini Hydra, they spawn in. Now, as soon as you've killed that overload, the best thing is to go straight to the left side, inside the interior section of this huge boss room. You want to head over there. Lots of other strategies, but I'm going to err on the side of caution, just for both beginners and for those that are revisiting the strike. Going to the left side is the safest. Right side is a little bit more shaky because there are radial area pools, which you do need to avoid if you are to be there. But left side, inside, is the best section. The boss itself, Belmond, the Transcendent Mine, is very aggressive, but being inside the left side, you will, 9 times out of 10, you'll avoid his attacks. There is a section on the far, far left, the access point on the far left. You can get sniped just if he comes up very far left. Otherwise, he's not the main interest here. It's the Mini Hydra, which is the Transcendent Hydra, and adds. Soon as the boss fight begins, you will have 2 overloads and adds spawn in. So you should be already on the left side, taking cover from the boss. And at this point is where the adds start aggroing. They start moving forward up towards the middle entrance point, or the middle lane. That is where the bulk of this fight will take place. It's the safest to pop a Sentinel Banner Shield. It's the safest to pop down stasis turrets. Anything stasis-related, freezing, blinding grenades, super helpful here. Just a little reminder that the Mini Hydra is a mini-boss, so it can be affected by the stasis freeze and blinding, as well as the overloads can be affected by freeze as well. So use those when you get really bogged down with the adds. But with stasis, it's really powerful to control the entire encounter here. So the Mini Hydra, he will head towards you. He isn't the priority. We will get onto just a little, in a few moments, discussing how adds spawn. But try and avoid the Mini Hydra. He isn't all that aggressive. He does do damage, but he's there just as an annoyance, really. It's the overloads that you really need to damage. Stun and burst down. they need to go. They need to be eliminated. And ideally, you've got both of them. If you stun them down the middle lane, Nova Bomb, Tether, wipe them out. And that's you. Those two champions, done. Rest will be just trash adds. Just keep on top of them. Just a little word of warning, there are three access points. I've talked about the far left, the middle, but also the right as well. You really want to have someone always keeping an eye on all, or at least the left and the right side access points, because there may be some stragglers, maybe some just trash adds that come in right or left side. So just keep an eye on that. So the mini Hydra, he can be kited around. Part of the left side, what's really good is there is this kind of square that you can go around. The square sort of begins at the middle lane, and you can kite him around that section. Once you're ready to do that, once you've eliminated all the adds, and hopefully all the overload champions, there are two that spawn, remember. You want to burst down the mini Hydra. Now, the mini Hydra itself is the one that controls the ad spawns. For this and the next couple of phases, he controls the ad spawns. Once you get him around about a third damage dealt, he will spawn more ads and two more overload champions. The same again. Once you've dealt with the first phase of ads, this is the second phase, or part two of this first phase. Burst down the mini Hydra, get rid of him. He will despawn at about a third damage dealt. He'll go away. The boss will still be active, bear in mind on this. During this entire time, the boss will be trying to figure out how to get into the small space. but just keep an eye on him. Again, we're not at that stage of damaging because we've got two more overloads and we have some additional adds to deal with. Same as part one of phase one. Eliminate them as soon as they come down the middle section. As the guys here, they have mentioned, you know, vortex grenades are a really fantastic asset for overload, just because you can have that consistent stunning, pop them out, use your rockets, anything really high damage is an Aggies. You know, any sort of Wolfpack round rockets, burst them down. Once again, they are the priority. Ads, clear them out. And then we've reached the end of phase one. At that stage, chip down the boss. He will be quite tricky to get an angle at, but there are various angles. For me personally, I would, with me being a sort of invis hunter, I would go way, way far, far right, all the way around to the right side of the room and just snipe at him there. Arbalest, just as a little reminder, and also anti-barrier weapons can shoot through his rotating shield. Just take that in mind. You can shoot through his shield if, as long as it's got anti-barrier potential. So, chipping him down up to, it's a third damage dealt, he will despawn and you'll enter phase two. So phase two, the boss doesn't spawn, he isn't around this phase, so you're a little bit more safer, but I still recommend that you stay in the left interior section. The mini Hydra, again, he will respawn and head towards you. This time you have two barriers, two wyverns, plus adds, which include fanatics. So, same again. The problem here isn't the barrier champions, because they don't, at least I've never personally seen them enter the interior sections of the boss fight, unlike the overlords. So the barrier champions, they can be left alone. Let them do their own thing. It's the wyverns that are the run killers.
Yep.
These guys, they're tougher than Lightbearer Guardians, I swear.
They're chunky.
Oh, they are so chunky. They just, man, they are just tearaways. You want to get these guys deleted out of the game because they can be an absolute nightmare to deal with. So again, once again, by that stage, you should hopefully have your supers built up. Use your supers on the wyverns. Myers are easy enough to deal with, and stun, it's the Wyverns that are really a big problem here. So it's, once again, the mini Hydra is what controls the adds, so try and avoid it, because if you don't, if someone did burst down the mini Hydra, you would have two additional barriers and two additional Wyverns and more fanatics to deal with. You don't want four barriers and four Wyverns roaming the boss fight here. So you want to take this really methodical, burst down the Wyverns first, the adds, and then the barriers, and then focus on the mini Hydra. Again, Wyverns easily dealt with: Galahorn, Wolfpack Round, Rockets, Tethers, Nova Bombs, Grenades, anything that's got really high burst potential. They are absolute priority. I cannot emphasize how much of a priority the Wyverns are. So that's phase two of part one. Part two is where you bring down the mini Hydra down to about, I think it's about half damage. He will spawn two barriers, two Wyverns, and it's the same again as part one of phase two. Once you've done that, once you've reached the mini Hydra's health gate, it'll be phase three. Part one is where it's the reverse, where the boss is now active, but the mini Hydra is not. And it's the same as phase one, where you'll have two overloads and adds. This time you don't have a mini Hydra to deal with, so this is a little bit more safer. Mm-hmm. And it's the exact same as phase one. Just really take it nice and easy. Overloads can also be, they're the second most run killer for the Glassway, just behind Wyverns. So take it nice and slow, nice and easy. Part two, once again, in order to spawn additional adds, is the boss is now the health gate. So, you know, you're not going to get into part two of phase three all that quickly, as long as you're just focusing on the adds and then chipping away at the boss. So the boss controls the next set of two overloads and some adds. And once you've dealt around about two-thirds damage, the boss will despawn and you'll get into phase four. And again, this is very similar to phase two. The boss and the mini Hydra are now both active, and you'll have two barriers, two Wyverns, again, more fanatics. Same as phase two, part one and two. Control the adds first, Wyverns need to go, then work on the barriers. Barriers are probably the easiest to sort of deal with and stun in this particular strike, but the Wyverns definitely need to go. So again, it's the mini Hydra that controls the ad spawns, and once you've killed him, two more barriers and two more Wyverns spawn in. Control those Wyverns, the adds, and then finish off the barriers, finish off the boss, and you have got the Grandmaster completion for the Glassway. Now, I will just point out at the end here, you don't need to kill the last two barrier champions at the end, but that's only for platinum rewards, all right? So if you want the platinum reward, you want to kill those two barrier champions. If you just want the complete, don't worry about two barrier champions. Just snipe the boss, he'll die, despawn the barrier champs, and you've got that completion.
And the barriers are easier to finish than the overload champions, yes, for ammo.
Yeah. I think out of the three champions, the barrier is probably the most easiest to control. Mm-hmm. Unstoppables, we don't have any unstoppables in this strike, but unstoppables are sort of the second least kind of likely to really mess you up. But overload champions are really annoying, just because of the whole stun mechanic, and not a lot of people kind of understand what stunning and disrupting overload champions mean. Just as a quick reminder before we move on to the Nightfall weapons, when it comes to overload champions, you can keep applying disruption rounds or disruption from various effects like vortex grenades, etc. But that's what stops them from regen in their health, and also from, like, you know, overload minotaurs. They like to teleport a lot, as well as overlord captains as well.
It's the destruction right effect you, that you, stops them. Personal.
Yeah.
What was that? Yeah,
I said, yeah, you know, I know the minotaurs all too well, like you're talking about. You go off them for damage for just a second, and they're right to you.
Yeah. So it's the destruction rounds that keeps their abilities at bay. And then for Grandmasters, I think it's around about 5 seconds after you've stunned them where you can't stun them again. So that's why I do see a lot of commentary where it's like, oh, my gun's not stunning overlords. It's because the fact that they cannot be stunned after a certain amount of time after they've been stunned. You can visually see this on champions with the sort of white. For overlords, it's a chest kind of effect where the actual chest kind of visual plate sort of pulsates white.
It's almost like there's like a SIVA cloud flowing around them or something.
Yep. So once it stops pulsating is when you can start stunning again. Right, so that is the Glasswave breakdown. I will just point out, if you want any more additional help or feedback or tips, tricks when it comes to this, just hit us up. It is one of the more pressing grandmasters there that can be offered in this game. We'll get onto Light Blade in another episode, but let's talk about some Nightfall weapons.
Yeah.
What do we have? Impetus.
Yes, so we are going to talk about the two new / returning Nightfall weapons that have come to us this season. That's Duty Bound and Silicon Neuroma. These are D2 weapons. They originated in year one of Destiny 2. They were statically rolled weapons, and now they have random rolls, and they also have an adept version. So they come with two origin traits. These are the Stunning Recovery and Vanguard's Vindication. We talked about these last episode, so I'll just cover them real quickly here. Stunning Recovery, that's stunning a champion, refills your magazine partially, triggers health regeneration, and improves recovery. This is a big one because it heals 60 hit points and grants 40 recovery for 3 seconds. Very useful. Vanguard's Vindication, final blows with this weapon grant a small amount of health, that is 7 health, so much smaller. All right, now on to the weapons. We're going to start with Duty Bound. This was from Curse of Osiris, a Nightfall weapon from Savathun's Song. This is a kinetic adaptive frame auto rifle that's 600 RPM. Going to be honest, not a lot of amazing things about this gun. I think you don't need it. It doesn't really bring anything completely new to the table other than its origin traits. It does have a zoom of 18. That is about 2 to 3 more points than your average adaptive. But that is paired with a 60 recoil direction and 45 stability, which is not great, especially if you're on controller. So arrowhead break is going to be pretty big, especially for controller users. And then if you can't get that, counterbalance is going to be nice. And then you want to max out your stability. Now, in terms of perks, we do have some things to work around those stat limitations, most notably Stats for All and One for All, the what we call the All for All combo. That's a really solid. Love that pairing. That's probably what I'm going to be looking for on this weapon. There's also the, I don't know what we want to call this, the meme combo of triple tap, 4x the charm. I'm not interested in that. If you want to have a gun that you can fire, especially if you're on Titan with, what is it? The chest plate. Yes, War Rig. You can actually fire this gun forever without reloading. I have seen the clips. So it's fun. It's neat. I'm not particularly sold about it. I don't think this is going to be amazing for...
Just use a sweet business. You know, be a regular guy.
Exactly. Right? Just use the exotic slot and go brrr, as fast as you want. There's some PvP combos. There's also a few other PvE perks. This does roll with Vorpal Weapon in the final column. Again, I'm not going to be using an auto rifle, a primary weapon, really for boss damage, especially the Adept version. There's some other combos that I'd rather use. You do have Frenzy, which you can pair with Stats for All or Triple Tap. That would be a very solid combo, as well as Rampage. But all in all, there's a lot of really great kinetic auto rifles right now. We've had Chroma Rush made a big splash during Season of the Splicer. We've got Scathelock from Season of the Lost. There's also just other 600 autos that I'm you know, that are also quite as great. We've got the Summoner made its debut again with an Adept version. That's in the energy slot, but still another great, great option. So there's nothing here that says, oh, I need to get myself a good duty bound because I don't have a good option otherwise. If you get a good roll, try it out. See if it works for you. I know that zoom and the recoil direction might trip some people up, but if you get Arrowhead Break, if you get a good roll, get some good perks, maybe this is the one for you. And if it is, great. Moving on to another kinetic weapon. This is Silicon Neuroma. This is also from Curse of Osiris. This was the Nightfall weapon from the Pyramidian Strike. This is an aggressive frame sniper rifle. And the origin traits aren't going to be huge on this one, especially since we don't have any sniper champion mods right now. That could change. We did have anti-barrier about a year ago in Season of the Chosen, anti-barrier sniper rifle, very fun to use. When I look at the perks here, there's a couple of standout options. We've got triple tap and firing line. That would be great for group play if you're using sniper rifles for burst damage, say in a raid like Caretaker. This would be a great option when you're standing on plates doing DPS. There's also some solo options. Again, triple tap is probably going to be the best option for the third column, but we do have Frenzy and Focus Fury, which you could use if you want to take this into in-game PvE solo play. Again, not very necessary. We do have some pretty great kinetic sniper rifles. The newest one that we had was this season, Thoughtless. That's the seasonal sniper rifle. That one can get Overflow, Focus Fury, or Overflow Firing Line. You can also add enhanced perks to that one, which will crank out your DPS to a crazy amount. There's also the Deepstone Crypt sniper rifle Succession. That's aggressive frame as well, also in the kinetic slot. You can get Reconstruction Vorpal Weapon. That's a role that I have. Love it a lot. Get a lot of bullets in your magazine. So there's not a whole lot that separates this from the other options. Obviously, this has an Adept version. So if you do get an Adept Silicon this coming week with a true God role, I think that would probably be something to hold on to. But I'm going to be pretty harsh in my roles when I get this to drop for me. So if it's not phenomenal, if I get crappy mag perks, I'm probably just going to delete it because I've got some other options and you can get some pretty sweet options already. So, if you get one to drop, nice. If not, you're not really missing out with the new weapons. I think there's some better options in the existing Nightfall weapons, Palindrome, Plug One. The updates to those make them pretty interesting to have. But these two, it's fine. Not every Adept weapon is going to be amazing. They can't all be top tier, but there are definitely some good rolls on these, but nothing necessary. All right. That's enough of the Nightfall talk. We're going to move on to our second weapon foundry. This is Hake. Kort, what can you tell us about Hake?
Yeah, Hake is our second sort of visit to the weapon foundry. It's all about damage. It's all about high impact. It's your really solid weapon. You'd think you wouldn't be able to snap this weapon in half compared to some Omolon weapon. So you be frightened to burst the fluid magazine, but Hake, all about damage. Its foundry origin trait is the Hake Breach Armaments, and that reads as: this weapon deals increased damage against vehicles, turrets, barricades, and stasis crystals. Technically, that means 15% damage versus vehicles and constructs. We'll get onto the sort of quick rundown of what that means in a second here, and 30% versus player barricades, turrets, and stasis crystals. Now, just a very quick rundown. You know, we are kind of, pressed for time here. We can't talk about everything from a technical aspect. I do intend to write a full text-based breakdown, whether that's on Reddit or in the Discord in the future. But what all this means is vehicles, a lot of enemy types in the game are classified as vehicles. Now, you've got your Goliath tanks, your interceptors, your threshers, your pikes from the Fallen class, walkers. You've also got sparrows. Guardian sparrows count as vehicles. So, it's very strange seeing that. But
a dead troll.
Yeah, this one.
Specifically, especially with sparrows, they don't actually proc Hake Breach Armaments. It does proc Vorpal for some strange reason. But what constructs I mentioned with vehicles and constructs being 50%, what constructs mean is originally I thought meant, you know, Shriekers or Oracles, you know, Hive Shriekers and Vex Oracles and Cyclops as well. They, for me anyway, you know, it's a construct. It's a specific thing that's been built, and it's kind of, you know, you wouldn't call it a vehicle, because that doesn't make much sense, because they're static, big machinery. However, when I was doing a little bit of testing with Haki Breach Armor, and this is where, you know, the full breakdown will come in the future, Cyclopses and Shriekers, they have this weird kind of damage bonus, which doesn't replicate this 15% and 30%, and also the Psionic Forging 2 artifact mod, which doubles the damage buff up to 30 and 60% respectively. They're a different class, and from my testing, it's around about 48% and 109% for Shriekers and Cyclopses for some reason. Yeah, it's not sure if that's intended, but I've decided to rename them as a different type called Automaton. they represent a little bit, that word represents a little bit more of a specific for them.
The sentient weapon category, of course. Yes.
So turrets also, they're a bit of a confusing category, because, you know, you think of turret, you're thinking there's not a lot of turrets in the game, but Scorpius turrets from Cabal, Chieftain Totems, those are the things that spawn out, and they're Solar, Arc, and Void. They do their various effects. The actual totem itself is classified as a turret, so you'd get that 30% damage increase against them. Acolyte Eyes, the sentries, they're also considered a turret. Of course, Guardian turrets, they're also considered turret, and ship turrets, specifically on the fallen ship that comes in and spawns a bunch of adds. The actual turret at the front, that counts as a turret as well. So that's just a little sort of brief breakdown of what stuff means what. Like I said, I will do a very deep dive breakdown in the future. So let's run down some weapons here. We do have the Perseus D. It is a world drop, and it's not craftable as the time of this recording anyway. It's a stasis scout rifle. It's a high impact frame. You'll sort of notice a trend with Haki. That means it's 150 RPM, and the high impact frame bonus for scout rifles is this weapon is more accurate when stationary and aiming down sight. So it's a hard hitting, but it is slow to fire, and it's got some really clunky handling.
Mm-hmm.
Perseus D also runs the all for all combo. So that's your stats for all and one for all. I'm kind of looking towards the sort of rapid hit and focus fury. It's a really nice synergy there. Explosive payload also rolls on Perseus D, which you can combo with stats for all. That explosive kind of AoE effect can proc from multiple damage inputs. If you tag three people or three combatants with explosive payload, you will get that stats for all proc. It can also roll Vorpal Weapon, which is 20% for primary weapons. So if you want to go for that full-on anti-vehicle or turrets build, go for that. That's 20% on top of your 15% or 30%, or with the Psionic Forging, that's 30% and 60%. And that's all stacking multiplicatively, so you really want to get into that roll kind of role build of being the anti-vehicle. That's your role there. It also has Headstone, just to synergize with the Stasis subclass, and also Haki Breach Armaments, which, again, it's 30% damage against Stasis Crystals. So you'll be probably one-shotting those Stasis Crystals to get the Stasis effects. Saint, we have a shotgun.
Yeah, like Court said, on the trend of Haki weapons, we have an aggressive frame, low RPM shotgun here. It is the Ragnil D. This is a craftable weapon, and it's also a roll drop. It's an aggressive frame, and it has the natural aggressive frame bonus of RPM increase after a kill. It has some above average stats in aim assist. You know, it's got good base handling and range. You have pretty good base stats against the rest of the aggressive family and frames. And this is also the first shotgun that has is craftable and has access to some enhanced perks. So it is not a huge PvE contender, but it definitely is a standout just in the fact that it has access to some things that no other shotguns in the game do. This was a weapon that got a lot of attention very early on because of how enhanced 1-2 punch was working. Not really going to get a ton into that because it has been changed since then, and now the way that works is that you just need to hit, I think it's like 90% of your shot package rather than a full 100% to proc 1-2 punch with something like enhanced 1-2 punch, but still running that with perpetual motion is great for some kind of Titan melee build. There are a lot of builds that kind of double down on that in PvE right now using various exotics. A lot of those have been tuned down and nerfed at various points, but there's plenty of those builds out there that are still very effective. You know, also doubling down on some of the Titan melee abilities like the mini hammer or the shield can make those builds a lot of fun. Other than that, outside of that, you have there's also auto-loading and some other things like that that may be good PvE options if you're looking to deal some damage. Aggressive frame shotguns aren't exactly known for their damage output, but there are some other fun things here. We've got subsistence and enhanced subsistence. Enhanced subsistence is giving a higher percentage of the magazine back per kill. Maybe that's, I think, like 19 or 20% versus you know, maybe 10 to 15%, and that also varies on weapon to weapons. You know, your SMGs, your autos, and mag size obviously has an effect on that. But it has subsistence, and you compare that with Adrenaline Junkie or Demo if you are looking to just run into a really heavy grenade build. This is kind of a just-for-fun thing here, but this is what a crafted one could have on it. If you're not going to go with the perpetual motion or auto-loading holster and 1-2 punch for a melee build, have some fun, put subsistence on a shotgun. It's a unique thing. Next, we are going to jump to Palmyra B, which is kind of bubbling up as a meta pick this season with the perks that it has in its pool. This is a Stasis Rocket Launcher Hauke Precision Frame. This has the inherent bonus of locking on to targets and having tracking, and we also want to add in here that the archetype has the archetypes have modifiers on them now, right? So this archetype has the 0.95 damage multiplier, but it doesn't really matter because it's not actually impacting the damage of the weapon in the way that we think that it is supposed to be doing it. It is only affecting the impact damage. So the 1.5 and 0.95 modifiers on the rocket launchers that were implemented are having a seriously minor impact at this point. So would not really consider its 0.95 multiplier because it's not even truly 5%. I don't even think it's truly 1%. I'd have to go back and look, but it is very minimal. As far as the rolls go, I mentioned that this is kind of an option that has bubbled up a little bit. A few options. Number one, the rocket changes that we just mentioned aren't having that negative effect on it, keeping the tracking at a very little trade-off, keeping that archetype at the top, I think, in my opinion. It makes it easy when it has intrinsic, especially if you're leaning in on the damage type. And it has one really essential perk for major DPS, and that is auto-loading holster and enhanced auto-loading holster. This is one of few weapons I think that can get that. Enhanced auto-loading holster just takes like a half second or something like that off of your reload time, but if you are pairing this with Izanagi's Burden and you have honed in your skill with the honed edge, you can make even slightly better use of that timing with that enhanced auto-loading, making sure that even if you get your fastest reload off possible and you reload your honed edge and the burden and you swap back to your rocket, that it will always be up. Next, we have a couple of really strong options in the fourth column for DPS with Explosive Light and Lasting Impression. Explosive Light will deal slightly more damage over those six rockets if you're able to collect the orbs versus Lasting Impression. Obviously, Lasting Impression has no requirement for prep. So kind of depending on if you're just willing to have a teammate or two put on some orb generation mods, really easy to roll with that there. Enhanced explosive light gives more velocity, which is not necessarily a good thing with a rocket launcher. So that is one that I may actually recommend with a tracking rocket like this. Other than that, you have another solo build in, um, or, or team build, I should say, in Ensemble and Frenzy. Frenzy is going to give you some solid uptime, and then Ensemble with some teammates, or maybe a Field Prep Frenzy or Field Prep Lasting Impression would be good if you're looking to use this in some solo play. So that's all I have to say for the Palmyra B. Awesome option. Has bubbled up to the top of the DPS. Definitely worth crafting. Definitely worth leveling up if you are somebody who's interested in dealing high DPS.
Yep.
So that's about it for those two. But yeah, let's just take it away on our final hockey.
Yeah, so we're going to go back up to the kinetic slot here. We're jumping around a little bit. We're going to talk about Herod C. This is the Gambit playlist weapon. I can't even remember what they call them now, but this is what is dropping from this season's Gambit. It is not craftable, but next season it will be added to the Drifter's loot pool, so you will be able to focus your Gambit engrams into this weapon. It does have a bunch of perks, though, so probably the biggest detriment to this weapon is all the different options that you may or may not want. This is a high-impact auto rifle, so it has the high impact frame bonus, again, more accurate when stationary and aim down sights. It also has an extra origin trait that is the invader tracker. So hitting the invader with this weapon will mark them for the rest of your team. Obviously not going to be very useful outside of Gambit. High impact auto rifle has great range, hits hard, and got low stability. So one of the things that I'm looking at, well, low stability, low handling, and low reload speed. So again, one of the things I'm looking at is the all-for-all combo. Stats for all is going to be really great here, especially since we don't have something like rapid hit in the perk pool. This is going to be very nice for getting those stability, handling, and reload in particular up. You're going to want that, especially if your barrel and magazine options aren't top tier. You do have Vorpal Weapon in the final column. So again, if you want to really spec into that passive damage buff against the widest number of enemies possible, that's an option. I would probably pair Vorpal Weapon with Fourth Times or Stats for All, potentially Subsistence. But again, if I'm going to be trying to proc Vorpal, it's going to take a lot of bullets to kill those kinds of enemies. So Subsistence may not proc as frequently as often. This is a Stasis auto rifle, and we did talk about another Stasis auto rifle last week in Crate, which is a Viced rapid fire frame. I'm going to be honest, I like Crate more for ad clear than I do for Herod C, especially with Subsistence and Overflow paired with the Viced Stinger perk. You're going to get a lot of bullets back, so that makes it really phenomenal for ad clear. Headstone does show up on both of these weapons. Again, I'd probably like it a little bit more on Crate, but I know that Crate's a bit harder to control because it's 720 RPM. So Headstone on Herod, you're probably going to proc a little bit more. It's going to be easier, especially if you're stationary. The weapon's going to feel a little bit better. But again, if I'm using this weapon for ad clear, which is what I would generally use auto rifles for, I'm probably just going to use Crate instead, just because of the origin trait being a little bit better for ad clear, but there are still plenty of options. You've got Frenzy, multi-kill clip on Herod in the final column. Again, it's going to be really Stats for All, Fourth Times, maybe Subsistence, maybe Heating Up, maybe Shoot to Loot, auto-loading holsters also here. You could take this in a lot of different ways, but I still think that Crate will come out on top when I'm just comparing the two Stasis auto rifles together. So there's some stuff, if you can make it work for you, go for it. I'm probably not focusing too much on this weapon in particular, but let me know if you find something that works really well for yourself. So that is the end of the Hake weapons. That's the end of all of our breakdowns. We just want to touch on the Twa real quick. I'm checking our time. Yeah, we got time to talk about that. So the big news that we had in our most recent TWAB was news about the Master Vow to Disciple that will be live by the time this episode comes out, as well as the rotating raids and dungeons for next season. This was teased a while ago, and we were pretty excited about this, so we finally got a little bit more information on that. Gonna go back to Master Vow real quick. The power level is 1580, and each encounter completed has a chance to drop the Adept version of the weekly featured weapon for the raid, which is nice. That is a change from the Vault of Glass, where it was only doing the challenge, gave you one shot at the Adept version, and then you had to go spend your spoils at the store. So it sounds like we're getting extra chances. If you do the whole raid for the Adept version of a given weapon, you will obviously be able to purchase it, I'm assuming, from the kiosk, as they didn't say anything else about that. And then DMG also confirmed that next season, that's season 17, all Master Power levels will be adjusted to match each other, because Master Grasp and Master Vogue were 1590 this season. So that is being adjusted next season, which is nice. And next season, we are getting a rotator system that is going to be split into seasonal and weekly categories. So in the seasonal category, the newest released raid and dungeon, that will be the Vow of the Disciple, and then the dungeon that we're getting next season, will grant pinnacle rewards for all encounters. The weekly category, this is what we're really excited about. Older raids and dungeons are going to rotate weekly. Only the final encounter of those activities will grant a pinnacle drop. And then for raids and dungeons that will offer a higher difficulty, the master difficulty, that difficulty will also be available to select should players want an additional challenge. So very excited about this. And the reason we're really excited about this is means that the raids and dungeons on the rotator system will be farmable. And the lockout on each of the encounters will be removed. Big thing to note here, this only applies to those featured in the rotator system. So, for example, if Garden of Salvation is our weekly featured raid, you can farm those encounters. But Vault of Glass will not be able to be farmed that week the garden is featured. Does that make sense to everyone? So this is huge. I still have yet to get a good accrued redemption, so I'm going to be farming the crap out of the opening of Garden of Salvation.
The time is upon us.
I'm going to go get myself that Archer's Tempo explosive head on a precision frame bow in the kinetic slot. Very excited for that. There's a lot of different things, so we'll be talking about raids in the coming season. The old raids, get to do some breakdowns of those, talking about what weapons and armor can drop from the various encounters. So this has been a big request for a long time, and it's finally coming next season. That's season 17. Very excited about that. I'm going to pass this off to Court to touch on the patch preview real quick.
Yeah, we've got update 4.0.1, which will be released by the time this episode goes out, or near enough anyway. And just a quick kind of rundown, some changes coming. Something I noticed some content creators posting recently was that Rulk was becoming quite shy and not transitioning back to his initial phase properly. So he'd just stay ducked down and you wouldn't be able to actually progress that fight, which I found quite humorous. There's also an issue with Caretaker's dynamic health threshold UI would not display consistently for all players, so that should be fixed. Virtual keyboard support is now available for console text chat. That's really big news for for our console brethren. Improvements have also been made to make text chat messages more legible, adding a system message text field that is italicized to display system text. Local chat now has an orange tint to it for differentiation, no longer the white color, and clear chat color distinction for in-game colorblind settings. There's also going to be a consumable item that allows viewing of element counts. So this is acquired through the Relic Conduit, and those are the sort of craftable, the actual craftable stuff for your weapons. You'll be able to see it within that. You can see it within DIM as well. There is a section under the actual your vault where there will be a hover over. You can display all the various sort of weapon element crafting stuff. We also have an issue where Devour would sometimes grant less buff time if multiple targets were killed in quick succession. That should hopefully be fixed. I've noticed that a few times as well. Fixed an issue where Lucent Executioners in the Throne Room were not rotating daily and have been stuck in the Fluorescent Canal, blocking the Ascendant Bounty Hunter Triumph. And also, there's an issue where the Nuna Sheen on gear persists permanently. That should hopefully be fixed as well. We have the Cleaver Emblem, that is the completing the Vow of the Disciple within the contest mode. So that was originally 24 hours, it was extended to 48. For those that completed in the second half of the 48 hours, the week of April the 19th, so again, that'll be this patch coming up, or at some point that during this week, yep, you should have your emblem granted to you. We also have Festival of the Lost Community polling results. Team Mech won with 52%. quite close one here.
Yeah.
Compared to last year, where it was pretty much a runaway with the Team Monster were not successful last year, and they weren't successful this year. So Team Monster with 48%. Those who voted will receive the emblem in a near future, and the mech ornaments, just as a little reminder, will be out later this year during Festival of the Lost 2022. Finally, we have a big, juicy twob, which we will cover next week. We have some big weapon changes, specifically weapon changes, and DMG tweeted out that he's at currently around about 7,600 words just for this twob alone.
Oh boy.
So we're looking forward to cover that. But let's wrap up this episode number 11, Saint.
Yeah, thank you guys for joining us again as we talk through more of these Grandmaster Nightfalls. We were a little caught off guard with Glassway coming up this week, but also glad that we could get a kind of preemptive episode out there for the next week in Destiny, and I think that we'll try to do that for the next four weeks or so as we go through a couple of the others, and we'll host different strikes as they come around on the GM rotator. So thanks for listening, and thanks for the support this past week from everybody. I just want to say thanks again on the weapons tool. I think that hit almost 1,000 hits already on the site that it's hosted on. So obviously some people have seen it and gotten engaged with it, and I've gotten feedback and just bug catches from Pippin and just other random people in the community. Really appreciate that and all the engagement there. And yeah, that's all I got. I can be found on Twitter, where I've been talking about Data way too much and hanging out in the Massive Breakdowns Discord and just podcast discussion and your patrons, whatever, what have you. And that's about all I have to say for myself. Impetus, where can the people find you?
Yes, folks, you can find me at Impetus on Discord. Again, I'm in the Destiny Massive Breakdown server. You're welcome to reach out to me, hit me up. What weapons have you found? What are some roles that you're interested in? What worked for you and GMs? I'm always happy to talk that stuff. On Twitter, my username is ImpetusAlways. So I look forward to seeing you guys succeed in the GMs. Go get them. You can do it. Glassway's tough. I have all the faith in the world in you. Court, where can people find you?
Yep, you can find me over on Twitter as Court Projects. You can also find me in the Massive Breakdowns Discord server. I'm just Court. And you can also find me and my projects, my Destiny spreadsheets, over on the Massive Breakdowns website. If you just scroll down on the homepage, my spreadsheets are linked within the link tree with a bunch of other fantastic community-resourced and sourced documentation spreadsheets, applications, etc., etc. Go give them some love. And thank you very much for joining us on episode 11. We'll see you in the next episode.
Bye-bye.